Hey everyone, Adam D. from Indefensive Ska here. A little note before we start the show. Los Angeles is dealing with multiple catastrophic fires. A lot of people have lost their homes and are in need. If you're able to help, please do so. There are a lot of great organizations you can donate to, like California Fire Foundation, Pasadena Humane Society, Mutual Aid LA, and there's even a list of people in the music industry that have lost their homes. Links are in the show notes for our Rob Harvilla episode. Thanks.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Consequence Podcast Network.
This is Indefensive Ska. Our mission is to document the ska scene from its traditional roots through until its emergence as a diverse global genre. The influence of ska resonates through your favorite bands and artists in ways you might have missed. I'm your co-host, Aaron Carnes, renowned author of the book In Defense of Ska, which is currently available in an expanded second edition. Joining me is your host, Adam D. of Omnigon and Asian Man Records band Link 80.
Aaron, what's your first memory of meeting Chris Candy?
I'm not exactly sure. I feel like maybe it was like an Asian Man Records party, anniversary show. That might have been it. Or no, actually, I take that back. Narboots. Our old band Narboots played with his band Chodo Ghetto, I think, several times. That's probably where I first met him.
Yeah, I met him a little bit before that. He was playing in a band called The Figurines. And met him at a show at iMusicast. But yeah, we played those shows with him in Chodo Ghetto. Chris Candy is John Candy's son. But more importantly, he is Mike Park's best friend.
More importantly, for sure.
I saw Chris last in the flesh at the Bruce Lee Band show at Bottom of the Hill. And you know what I did at that show, Aaron?
What'd you do?
I made him go get in the pit with me and dance. I feel like that's an important thing to do. Got to be that instigator.
I'm surprised it's taken us this long to get Chris on the podcast because he's in my book. And there's a whole entire chapter dedicated to him and his ska story.
Yeah, what the heck?
What the heck?
It took us 5 seasons to get to Chris. So when we first scheduled this interview, Chris had to reschedule due to the Palisades fire. So we just like to remind listeners that you can still donate to the relief fund. Links will be in the show notes for this show.
Now let's find out why Chris Candy is Mike Park's best friend.
Okay, Chris, who is in your Facebook profile photo?
That's Norwood Fisher and Mike Park.
So two ska legends.
Yes.
Well, who's more of a legend though? Mike Park or Norwood?
Ooh.
Sophie's choice here.
It's got to be Norwood. It's got to be Norwood because, well, that's, oh, ooh, that is the,
careful because Mike Park will be listening.
Norwood influences Mike Park. So I think he just by default has legendary status. So,
okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, that was that photo was taken at this really cool concert like a year and a half ago. I think it was for the singer of the Specials. It was like a benefit show. And
oh yeah,
it was in Los Angeles and it was in a very fancy part of Los Angeles and Mike had gotten tickets and we had gone to this show and it was like in someone's backyard in kind of central LA. Fancy neighborhood, and Fishbone was playing, and that was the last time I saw Fishbone as the current or as the what was the OG lineup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
before I mean, has the gossip going on over here with the Fishbone gossip on In Defense of Ska? Is it brought up a lot? I mean, it's the hottest topic.
We haven't really.
I mean, it's all kind of common knowledge, I think, at this point. So.
I mean, we could spill some tea.
We've stayed out of it. We just try to report the facts.
Yeah, we're staying out of it. We love all Fishbone.
No, I do too.
You know who else we love here at In Defense of Ska? Mike Park.
Yeah.
How did your friendship start with Mike Park?
Mike Park, it started, I was in the eighth grade. And oh my God, I'm 40 now, just for context. I was in the eighth grade and I was really into ska. And, you know, on the back of CDs back in the day, you know, there would be the address to the record labels, or sometimes there'd even be a phone number. And Asia Man Records, I can't remember what CD it was. It might have been a Mail Order Is Fun or something. And there was a phone number. So I just called it. And I thought that Asia Man Records was going to be like a legitimate business. Not to say that it's not. But what I thought was a legitimate business was a record label had like a front desk and an office and like fax machines. You know, I thought I was like calling into the Larry Sanders Show or something like that. And so I'm talking to this dude on the phone and I'm just like fanboying out on Asian Man Records. And I'm talking about all of the bands and what's Link 80 up to and what's Genka Pickle up to, what's Bruce Lee Band up to, what's Mike Park up to. And the dude's like, oh, I'm doing pretty good. And I just like freaked out. You know, 8-year old me was freaking out. And honestly, now I remember the catalyst of the phone call was my very first band was covering two Skanky Pickle songs and a Bruce Lee Band song. So I was like curious on the lyrics for Fakin' Jamaican in the bridge. And Mike informed me what they were. Hasi Selassie Rastafari. And so that started this like idea of like, oh, I can talk to people in this world because ska was so important to me and it was just like the coolest music. And then kind of just kept talking to each other via email. And at the time I had a bunch of Star Wars toys and I traded Mike Park like a box full of Star Wars toys, unboxed, by the way, for a bunch of Asian Man Records swag. Like he gave me the rest of the catalog and like a bunch of posters and like what was a big get at the time was VHS tapes of Skanka Pickle playing shows. Cause they were like, you know, the band at that time, the Skanka Pickle live record was like the record for me. Like it just really was super important because it was so energetic. All those early Pickle records just didn't have the energy that that live record had. I mean, all the songs are like three times faster. And I just really was fiending for what that band was like. And so he sent me, and it was like, it was, you know, honestly, guys, it was like so cool because it was like going into a world that I'd only like heard stories about. And like, you know, to see these like dingy clubs in Florida or like, the Bay Area, and I'm just some kid in like West LA, Bel Air. You know, it was just so far removed from anything I had known. So it was so cool to see it. And yeah, now you can find all that stuff on YouTube, right? But like, I just remember getting a chance to watch that stuff was like so cool.
Yeah. What were the other two songs that you covered? You said Fake It Jamaican, but what else?
We did Fake It Jamaican, and then we did Gilligan's Island. So we only played two songs. And then that band was called the Bay Street Hooligans. And yeah, we were like, Bay Street is a famous surf beach in SoCal in the Santa Monica area. And so I was like, oh, what? I kind of confused hooligan culture with rude boy culture. So, but yeah, you know, all of that stuff was like, yeah, that band only, we played two shows and then we broke up and but that was kind of my intro into the whole thing and meeting Mike. And then eventually as I got older and I had a car and I could go on road trips, you know, we went and visited Mike up in San Jose and stayed with him. And then it's just started this like long friendship. That's like, I mean, he's like my older brother, like cousin or something like that. Mm-hmm. He's so judgmental and critical and loving. Gives me the hardest fucking time out of any one of my friends. It just is like confusing to everyone around me. They're like, who is this guy? But you know, he's the Shacho.
I'm in the same boat as you. Mike sends me texts, critical texts about this podcast, which he listens to every single week. Like the most nitpicky shit you can imagine.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's your thing? What's something that Mike gives you like criticisms about?
Oh, okay. This is a great question. Well, easily, the easiest one is that a Chodo Ghetto record hasn't sold in like 2 years. Asian Man Records. Even more specific, like he will always ask what's going on with my entertainment career in acting. So he'll always basically give me notes on what to do, or notes on dieting, or notes on one of our favorite things to do is he's like, okay, do you think you could do this? This is the diet. All right. You wake up in the morning, 1 cup oatmeal. Okay. Then 1 grape. Then 1 raisin. Okay, lunch. Lunch. 2 hard-boiled eggs. Giant bowl of arugula. Dinner. Soft scramble. Turkey breast. Like, he just like goes through your whole menu. And he's like, can you do it? He's like, you're in. And he'd be like, you'd be so shredded just every day doing pull-ups, walking, just drinking water, sauna. Every day you'd be shredded. Just like, it's just such a bizarre, unique friendship. He's the best. He knows how to deep dive right into your lap and ask you the most embarrassing question of all time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He knows how to like spot your weakness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then hone in on it.
That's real.
So before I met you, then I don't know if I knew this at the time, but I do recall seeing you on stage once before we knew each other. And I think it was at the Gilman Show Memorial for Lynette.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You played trumpet on that performance, right?
I did. Yeah. 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 Totally.
It was Mike Park, Monkey, and you. Was there anyone else besides?
There was actually, and it was a real treat. It was Jerry and Kincaid Smith of Hepcat.
Oh, wow.
It was just like, I guess Kincaid had moved up to Berkeley and was just looking for bands to play in. And I was a huge Hepcat fan. So it was just like an honor to get to play. Cause I'm like, I played trumpet in marching band and I'm not a great trumpet player at all. And so to play alongside this guy was epic. And then also just, you know, that was the moment because it was like, we got to play all those Pickle songs and all those Bruce Lee Band songs. It was just, yeah, it was like, it was a crazy high honor to get the chance to do that. I trip out sometimes because I've played trumpet with so many bands, like be it on like one song or like popped up on stage and played like one song with someone. Like I have a very funny trumpet run through my life.
The first time I met you, Chris, was at iMusicast. What band were you playing with then?
Who was I there? You got Link 80 had played a show or Dessa had played a show. Was that what it was?
Dessa for sure. Yeah.
I guess I was up there. I had a band at the time called The Figurines, and we were like an indie rock kind of Guided by Voices.
Yeah.
Pixies kind of band. And I didn't have much creative control in that band. I was just, you know, this was after college or after high school. And I was just looking to play music and this was the crew that I could hop in. It's kind of, I stuck out in that band because I was like so energetic.
Well, and you were like the trumpet player in a sleepy indie rock band.
Totally.
Like, that's like, you know, kind of a mismatched pairing.
Yeah, totally. It didn't really fit.
Did you only play trumpet or did you play like auxiliary instruments?
Yeah, I played like keyboard and it was, you know, in that like, the songwriter was really good in that band and he was a nice guy, but it was just funny because, again, like, to backtrack too to the Mike Park thing, Mike got me my first real job in punk rock working on the Vans Warped Tour. And so I worked for the Plea for Peace Foundation tabling every day at the Vans Warped Tour. And I did that with Mitta Goodwin. Mitta was the driver of that. And so after the Vans Warped Tour, I had this real strong connection with a booking agent in Stockton in Mitta Goodwin. So, you know, any band I would play with, I could guarantee a weird show in Stockton. So that band would go up. And I think that band, the Figurines, played like Stockton like 8 times. And every band I'd been in since, I'd be like, we can always play Stockton. Chodo Ghetto played every place in Stockton. And it was always like the most bizarre, surreal gig of all time. And that town was so like, you know, fatigued and whatnot. And oh my God. But such a fun like chapter for sure.
What was the most low attended Stockton show?
I just remember...
Because I had a really bad
one. Yeah, I think might have been, well, our, it wasn't the one with Dessa. I remember Chodo Ghetto played Blackwater Cafe with a rockabilly band. And I just remember, like 3 people in the audience. And then the rockabilly guys, I was really impressed actually, because the rockabilly band, the dude found a way to like lean his gigantic stand-up bass on the floor. Maybe he had like a kickstand, but he could stand on it and like play it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, just, I remember watching this going like, this is incredible. We might've played with the Phenomenauts at that show. But I just remember like we played San Francisco the night before and then we played Stockton the next day. And the San Francisco show was really fun because it was with like, I think it was with Shinobu. And a lot of those guys. And then we just immediately went over to Stockton and it was just like, no one.
Was that the house party that we played with you in San Francisco? Or was that a different one?
No. Was it the one that was upstairs?
It was in like a, somebody's like front room.
Yeah.
Kind of like, I feel like it was out in the sunset and definitely Hard Girls played and the cops showed up during Hard Girls.
Yes. Yeah. That was that show. That was a cool show. I have photos from that.
I remember one of my favorite moves as a front person that you did was you went along like, because, you know, there's no stage. So people are just kind of standing in a row watching the band play.
Right.
And you just went to like each person and like shook their hand like profusely and like just went down the line, just shaking their hands and like kind of like convulsing your head as you're doing it. Just like, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
That felt like a very Mike Park like stage move too.
Oh, he influenced so many bad behaviors. Like,
like what? Give us some bad Mike behaviors that you have.
Mike, his anxiety trickled into me. So, you know, it was like, I all of a sudden felt like everything had to be incredibly rushed when you were going on stage. So I was such a jerk to everybody in the band. Like, okay, we gotta go, gotta go, gotta go. And it's like, you know, the drummer's setting up his kit. You know, he's got to get it. He's about to play some gnarly stuff. Like, it's going to take him maybe 5 minutes. And I was like trying to get it up in 30 seconds and like just bringing that kind of like punk rock ethos. And like Mike was totally like that. But I didn't catch wind to it until later. And I was like, oh, this guy like is just like rushing to play and rushing to get off. I mean, I love Mike. I'm trying not to, Mike, he's going to be such a punisher. But yeah, I remember like that's a pretty bad one. I had to like slow down. And I even think too, like early Chodo Ghetto stuff, I was like, I think he probably told me to like just go crazy all the time. And it pushed me into like a place of like going super crazy. Like I remember this one show we played in Long Island. And like, I like took my pants off and I was wearing my boxers and like I had a beer and I grabbed like cinnamon and I poured it on the beer. And I was like saying like, baby wants a cappuccino. And I was just like, what the fuck am I, like, I cringe at all of these moments because I'm just like, what? Like, it's just, it's like, but you know, it's okay. It's totally okay. But that's like comes from this Mike Park, got a push performance, skank a pickle kind of like, you know, thing. And I remember there was a moment where I was like, especially with Chodo Ghetto, I just stopped moving a lot. And I just really focused on chilling and playing. And I ended up being more powerful. I felt that way.
You could actually have enough air in your lungs to sing.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't like vomiting on the side of the stage.
In Defense of Ska will return in a moment.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
For some reason, I remember watching Chodo Ghetto once, and there you did like kind of this long in between song banter,
okay,
where you like you explained the concept of like how bands are like all bringing in ingredients and how you explained it was like preparing a soup,
okay,
and you went through each instrument and you explained how it was like what soup ingredient it was. It was a very like apt analogy to creating music. It's like creating soup.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think, yeah, that's something. Yeah. Something I probably said.
I just remembered we actually, Aaron and I played this, one of the Stockton shows.
Yeah.
With Chodo Ghetto. I remember because we got giant burritos beforehand. And then my car broke down on the way there, and my friend AJ had to come get me, Andrew Junker, and drive me out to the show. And then during your set, one of your pieces of banter was, you held up your hands, you were like, you were talking about these giant burritos that we'd gotten, and you were like, guess how big these burritos were? And then you started like moving your hands apart, but then you got past where the burrito actually was, and you were, well, actually it was this big. and AJ still quotes that to this day. Like if we go get burritos, he'll quote that line to me. You're famous.
Thank you.
You've impacted somebody's life.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the best. I mean, it was like absolutely the most fun. You know, California is such a cool place because you can go and like tour a week in the state and play all kinds of different places, and it was always like a trip. And always super fun. I remember that very well. I have photos from that day, actually going and staying in your place. We played that show the night before, and then you're right. We played. I can't remember all the beats to that, but I know we did a podcast. Chodo Ghetto did a podcast at your place, and I think it got lost or something like that. It never came out or something.
Yeah, the file got corrupted.
Right, right.
Speaking of states, though, California. Let's shift over to Hawaii. How many times have you and Mike Park been to Hawaii together?
I've been to Hawaii with Mike only twice, actually. It's only been twice.
Okay. More than once, though.
Definitely. First trip
was
with the Bruce Lee Band because kind of like a bench trumpet player. They let me play every once in a while.
Yeah.
And then the last time it was just like a trip. He was going over there with his buddy, Johnny, who's my buddy too. And yeah, like those trips are like few and far between, but they're super fun. Cause it's just like kind of got the punk rock element where you're like sleeping on a couch and you're just like kind of walking around Hawaii and like, you know, there's nothing more to them. You know, it's like you're watching. I remember on that last trip, it was like Indecent Proposal. Is that the one, the Woody Harrelson movie?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that it, Aaron? I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Yeah, where it's like Demi Moore and Robert Redford get together. I remember I'd never seen the movie, but like Johnny happened to have it on this random Hawaii movie channel. And so I, you know, it's just like weird stuff happens and you're just watching this 90s, you know, dramatic thriller and hanging out with like your ska buddies. It's such a hodgepodge, but it's cool. And I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. It's just like a lot of fun and the best energy. And yeah, just like the thing I think a lot of people don't realize with Mike is really, as much as he moves around, he doesn't want to do shit. He likes to just chill. Like Mike's main thing is like, he loves like snacking, loves snacks, mm-hmm. and loves watching TV and watching YouTube. He just wants to chill fully.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I remember when I used to, when I lived in San Jose, I'd get together with him. And a lot of times it would just be like, let's walk. And we would just go on walks in random places.
Yeah.
And one time we were walking somewhere in downtown San Jose and someone, there was like some booth, they had food for some reason. I can't remember why, but somehow like we got free food from these people.
Of course.
Mike was just like, this is the greatest day of my life.
Yeah. Like, so yeah, I've traveled. So like, I remember, this is actually the moment I knew Mike was like uniquely himself and like uniquely a psycho. Like I worked for this guy, John Hagler. His name's Tito. Tito is a really accomplished front of house engineer, tour manager. He works a lot in that industry and he started out in the San Pedro punk scene. You know, so he knew all, you know, knows all the Toys the Kill guys and the FYP crew. I mean, same people, but like, so I started working for Tito, as like a guitar tech. And we worked for this guy named Donovan Frankenreiter, who Donovan was on Jack Johnson's label. And it was like completely different from the punk rock world. And I thought working with Tito was going to be like working with Mike Park. I'm like, okay, here's like another dude who's going to be like kind of, you know, it's going to be slim living. And I remember I get there and we were talking about food and I was like, well, what do you want to get to eat? Like, are you like on a budget or something like that? And he's like, fuck that. He's like, I spend money on food. He's like, I'm not doing that Mike Park shit. And he was like just going into how Mike Park was crazy. He would be a great guy to get on the podcast. If you really want to get Mike Park intel, Tito's the dude. Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of stories too.
Right.
All right. Tito, if you're listening, we want to hear your stories on why Mike Park's crazy.
Is the Indefensive Scott podcast just turned into why Mike Park's crazy?
No, it's a Mike Park love fest.
Yeah.
I mean, you're Mike Park's best friend, so we have to talk about Mike. Mike is part of the equation.
No, he's family.
Last time I saw you was at the Bruce Lee Band show.
Yeah.
What did you do at that show? Tell the listeners.
That show, I played trumpet with Bruce Lee Band for like four songs or three songs. Two things. I got in the mosh pit with you, which I haven't been in like a pit in forever. And you just like literally grabbed me and like in a way you were like, you're coming with me, buddy. And like just pulled me in.
Yeah, that's my move.
You're coming with me.
But I remember what I did was I just was like, I wanted to level up the show. And so I went on and the band had like the Bruce Lee Band shirts and this round of shirts had cutters. So Dan gave me a shirt. I had my regular shirt over it. And so I went up like a pro wrestler and I ripped my regular shirt and revealed that I was a member of the Bruce Lee Band and got pretty good crowd response. Pretty good.
I got a good pop. Yeah.
It was sweet though. I was honestly, you know, I'm always like, I have like an insecurity around other bands because I'm still so impressed with like, I'm really impressed with Dan, still impressed with Mike. You know, and Jeff Rosenstock, even at that point too, I'm just like, these guys are, I love all of their music. So I always like feel a bit out of the loop. And also I'm not like the best trumpet player. So it's like, I'm always like, you know, when I was a backstage, Dan gave me, a shirt. He's like, here, man, put on the shirt. I was almost teared up. I was so happy to be included.
Did you connect Mike to Jeff Rosenstock?
I did, yeah.
Oh, let's hear that story.
It was because of Mike, but, you know, I met Jeff on the Vans Warped Tour, and Jeff was with ASOB, and his band was sneaking on to every day of the Vans Warped Tour, and mm-hmm. they would find a tent that had a PA to play at. And it was, you know, genius because local security had no idea who was on the tour, so he could get on every day. And he did it for like 3 weeks before the tour caught wind. And, you know, Jeff and I had just like a strong friendship from there. And Jeff was super inclusive, and he let me play with ASOB at the time. He had a trumpet even that I got to play. So it was like this cool friendship that started there. And then Jeff and Mike had met on the Living Room Tour. And the Living Room Tour was a tour that I did with Mike Park that I drove on, where we toured all of America and only played people's living rooms. So it was like a 2-month tour. It was Monica, Hiro Tanaka, myself. And, you know, it was such a cool, it's still to this day the coolest trip musically I've ever been on. And Mike would play shows. And there was a Long Island show, and Jeff and Mike had met there. But it wasn't until I'd reconnected with Jeff and I had started Chodo Ghetto, and they, Bomb the Music Industry was a real big support system for Chodo Ghetto because they got us, you know, early tours, and they really put us on the map. Jeff's label, quote unquote records, you know, put out those records early on. And Jeff had sent, I think, Get Warmer to Mike, and Mike was kind of unsure. And I just told him, I said, you got to put this record out. Jeff's really good. And I just, you know, it was just, it's more like you just, that's just what you do. You know, it was so clear to me that Jeff was like going to be really big. And it was like, Mike, this is kind of a no brainer. But Mike was unsure. He was really unsure in the beginning, because it was just like, Mike's kind of like traditional when it comes to his musical taste. So he does sometimes need to be shown certain stuff. But he's got a great selection. Like, he's a great selector. But it was like, I remember with that, he was kind of like, all right, we'll see. But, you know, that having Jeff on the label, I feel like was another phase. It was like the Shinobu, AJJ, Bomb, Lemuria kind of pop that label had. And that Making Music Fun Again tour, that was kind of peak Asian Man, at least for my time and stuff. And so. But yeah, that's kind of how it went down.
I feel like it was sort of this era, this punk era that Mike was able to kind of represent on Asian Man, that I think was like all these bands came from punk, like kind of punk was sort of in their DNA, but the music they played was kind of eclectic and,
yeah,
you know, didn't necessarily follow the rules of what like punk is supposed to be, and all really good bands. Yeah.
Yes. Still super musical. And I remember, yeah, and when we Chodo Ghetto did our very first East Coast tour with Bomb the Music Industry with Jeff, he took us out, and that was right when they had signed with Asian Man and they were going to be doing Get Warmer. So I was hearing all those songs live, and I was also just seeing it on the ground. I was like, oh man, like this dude is bringing people to random ass towns across the Eastern Seaboard. You know, it's pretty awesome. And, you know, I'm just like so hyped for him and where he's gone. It's a cool thing to see, the kind of arc of everything.
Yeah.
Tell the audience about Hiro Tanaka. You just brought him up. Let's talk a little bit about Hiro.
Hiro's kind of the second brother. You know, it's like met him through Mike on the Plea for Peace tour. And he was, I was in high school at the time, and he was working for the band Selby Tigers. And he was just this like hip looking Japanese dude. He was wearing sunglasses, I think, at the time, you know, and he looked more like LA hipster, you know, tight shirt and, you know, tight jeans, and kind of just looked more just different than like maybe Mike Park looked, kind of, you know, whatever's cheap. Anyways, we just have like, Hiro's a photographer. He's a really good photographer. And he moved to America to go to college at Santa Monica City College, and he called me. And we ended up being roommates for 5 years. And prior to that, he was on that living room tour. Hero would get hired, and still does, by a lot of bands, and a lot of them were kind of in the indie rock genre at the time, to go on tour and just take photos. And he's really just like an energy boost. You know, if your tour is having a rough time, having Hero on the tour is like a perk, because he's really fun and he's really energetic, but then you're also going to get at the very end of it, like really beautiful photos. He just like sends you these. What he would do is you'd get to the end of the tour and you'd get like a CD-ROM in the mail or a DVD, and it had all these photos of your time, and you'd be looking at them and you'd be going, like, I don't remember this, or I can't believe he captured that. And, you know, he captures stuff that's like, you think it's just a boring picture of you taking a bite of pizza, but he will make it look like it's like the most aggressive, like, action you've ever made in your life, like just like devouring something. But yeah, you know, we live together, like I said, in Santa Monica. It's like Mike and Hero are like the two dudes that I will more or less always pick up at LAX. I'll do it for any family member, my girlfriend, anybody. But those are like the two friends who get the like, all right, I'll hook you guys up.
Explain to the listener really quick how Hero talks, because it's real interesting.
Okay, so Hero talks in this. He's Japanese. He's from southern Japan. Mm-hmm. He speaks in like he'll say a sentence, and he'll speak in Spanish, German, Japanese, and English all at once. It'd be like,
yeah,
oh, shiza candy wa, oh, chotto scary poquito, huh? Don't you think?
And how does Mike talk to Hero?
Mike will talk to him in. Well, how does Mike talk to him? He doesn't really talk exactly.
Doesn't he kind of mimic?
Kind of mimics. Yeah, we kind of have our own like hybrid bro language that we talk to each other, and it's like, oh, sima, chotto matte, oh, just kind of like get in like a group. We're like an improv group. We have like a group mind, and we like just the minute we're all together, we're like the Three Stooges. We just it must be funny to look at from afar. But, you know, it's these two giant dudes and then this like skinny, you know, Japanese guy who's taking photos all the time and, you know, smoking cigarettes. And, you know, and what Hero and Mike have in common is they're both incredibly cheap, you know, and Hero does not like to spend money. And so the big, like, I'm a charitable dude. I always hook Hero up, you know. And Mike was the one who taught me that. Was another bad habit Mike taught me. He'd be like, oh, like I remember after the living room tour, Hero and I drove back together from Baltimore, Maryland to Los Angeles. And we did it in 3 days. It was just Hero and I. And we were getting closer to Las Vegas. And Mike was like, you got to pay for Hero's buffet. You guys got to go to the buffet. And you got to pay for it. I was like, okay. And that turned on this thing in my mind where I'm like, I always got to pay for Hero. And people will be like, do you pick up the tab for him every time? And it's like, it's embarrassing, but then it's also like, I don't, yeah, okay. But Hero did once, Mike Park made him buy us, it was a buffet called the Sweet Tomatoes. It was a terrible name down here called Soup Plantation, but Mike made him buy it. After he bought us lunch, Hero bought us lunch. I went to Mike and I'm like, this is going to be like 2 years worth of free meals. Hero.
We'll be right back after this.
So Hero put out a book on Asian Man Records of his photos.
Yeah.
So you can get that. But also, he had a photo of me that was in the final running of that was going to be in there, but I guess it got cut in the very last second. It was a photo of me playing drums. It was at a Narbu show at Stork Club. And like, I'm like, you kind of see me with my hands, like I'm playing and my head's kind of tilted. Have you seen this photo?
I've seen this photo. Yeah.
Cause Mike told me, he's like, oh, you're in Hero's book. And I was like, rad. And then it wasn't in there.
I'm sure you could get it. I mean,
I have it in my computer somewhere. Cause he sent it to me. Hero did.
The one looking like from down below the bass drum, kind of like up through the drums.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. It was just like super early. It's a pretty early show. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a cool photo.
I think I have that one too. So.
That's back when I played drums.
Back when you played drums. Should get back to that.
Narboots was such a cool band. I always felt that Narboots and like Chodo Ghetto were kind of like in the same little, like, we were like in the same little cubby at Asian Man Records of like bands that Mike reluctantly put out.
Bands that Mike put out because he likes the people.
Yeah. It's like,
yeah. Like, we were definitely in that team.
Yeah. But that's like the best baseball team to be on at the punk rock label. The one the punk rock owner doesn't even want. Not speaking for Narboots.
See, you put out two records with Mike, right? Or did Walk as Godlike come out also?
No, we
put, so that was a 7-inch, right?
Yeah, we put out Sparkles, and then we put out this record called Monstrosity with Mike. But Sparkles was really the big push for us as a band, and then Monstrosity was, you get into a territory with Chodo Ghetto where Fletcher ended up being, who's the bass player, he kind of creatively was like directing a lot of the stuff, and but some of it was super cool. And that Monstrosity record is a supplement to Chodo Ghetto scored all of the movie Pinocchio by Walt Disney. And there's a long, like 90-minute song that syncs up perfectly to that film. And so then Monstrosity was just the original music that came from that.
Wow. Nice.
Wow.
I like that. Yeah. Okay. Didn't come out on Asian Man, Wildfire. Tell us a little bit about the 2019 record, Wildfire.
It's the last one for right now. And it was, again, it was like really directed by Fletch. And but we had a new guitar player come in on that record, and he really brought some fun new guitar music to that. But at the time, like Chodo Ghetto really paused because everyone was just getting pulled in different directions. And the core kind of base of that band, was just, it was harder and harder to get that together. And so Wildfire is kind of the last thing. And, you know, there's one other thing that we can put together and finish. It's just finding the time to do it. I love all those guys. You know, I was thinking about them all today before I came on here. I was happy you guys wanted to talk about it.
Yeah.
That was just such a beautiful part of my life. And yeah, still love all those dudes so much.
The guitar work on Charlie Cluster 8, that was what really stuck out to me from the new record. The riff on that's really cool. And then the track right before that is called Hero AI.
Yes.
Just do it, Hero.
Which I feel like has to be a nod to Hiro Tanaka, even though it doesn't really.
The Hiro is, that's Hiro's voice. So like Fletcher's got a very big like comic book brain, and he was just like throwing that into the mix. And that whole record's got tons of samples. Like I was listening to it driving home tonight. It's like Laura Stevenson's on that record. Matt Kurz is on that record. Hiro's on that record. I don't know if Jeff's on it. I don't think he is, but yeah, it was just like reaching out to friends and getting them to do like a little thing. And that band, we all went to school together for sound design. So it was like, we all had these audio backgrounds. And so everyone was kind of bringing their like cinematic editing chops to the mix. And we all had opinions on how mixes sounded and stuff.
All right. So let's talk about what you've been up to recently. You made a couple Coldplay music videos.
Yeah.
Explain, please. How did this happen?
So, okay. I used to work out at the Equinox gym. It's a fancy gym.
Yeah.
And Chris Martin worked out there. And Chris was training with a good friend of mine, this guy, Matt Kars. And Matt was basically Chris's personal trainer who would train with him like 5 days a week, but he ended up becoming like Chris's best friend. And I had always bumped into Chris Martin at the gym, and he was always super pleasant and super nice. And it got to be around, well, a year before my birthday, our friend Matt passed away due to cancer. And so Chris and I had kind of reconnected through that passing. And I kind of said to Chris, well, maybe we should do like a group workout in honor of Matt. And he did it one better and was like, well, let's do this thing called Matt Club, where I'll invite everybody up to my house. We'll do a group workout, go swimming in the ocean. And so all of Matt's friends came up to do that. And Chris always knew, you know, I'm in the entertainment world and I act and I've made like sketches and shorts and all kinds of stuff. And I think Chris always kind of knew I did that. It was the night of my birthday, I was turning 40, and my girlfriend and I were staying in Santa Monica at a nice hotel. And then we were going to go to the beach the next day. And I'd gotten a FaceTime from Chris Martin. And he said, hey, what are you doing tomorrow? And I told him, well, I'm going to be going to the beach. It's for my 40th birthday. I'm busy. And he said, well, would you want me to ask you still what I was going to ask you? And I said, sure, I could take it. And he said, well, would you fly with me on my jet to Las Vegas to film some footage of me handing balloons out? And I thought he wanted me to just do B-roll for him, like just kind of little social media stuff. Like, and I said, oh, I can't do it. I've got my birthday. And so he said, oh, it's okay. And I was like, well, let me help you find someone. And he was like, no, we can do it internally. And not 30 seconds went by. I had talked to my good friend Clark, and Clark said, dude, there's no deposit on your beach birthday party. Like, you could push it. So hit him back. I asked if my girlfriend Ryan could come. He's like, absolutely. And it wasn't until I agreed to do it that I realized that this wasn't just filming like social media videos. His manager had contacted me, given me the song All My Love. 'Cause you got all my love. Whether it rains or pours, I'm all yours. And they're like, you're directing this video. And it was at that point, and my girlfriend Ryan, she is the art director on all of these films. The first one, we DIY'd the shit out of that thing. We just tag teamed that whole thing. We made that thing together. And we basically flew out to Vegas with Chris. He went to go play a show at the T-Mobile Arena. And Ryan and I had gone and basically had gotten a car and drove up to Old School Vegas. And at Old School Vegas, we were just like, at that point, connected with the owner of this hotel who had owned 5 other hotels. They gave us access. It was like out of a movie. We were running around, and we then had gotten to a point where we had 45 minutes with Chris, and we filmed him in the suit handing balloons out. And there's actually a funny Mike Park connection to this, because the reason I chose that area is because I would go there with Mike Park. Like, the hotel we were at, the D, where the intro shot of Chris playing the horse race gambling thing is because I did it with Mike Park. So it was like, it was from my experience of being with Mike. I was like, oh, we need to do this. And we packaged the whole thing together. And then that ended up just rolling into, we've done 4 videos total. Ryan and I went down to Melbourne, Australia, and did a video with Coldplay and Ralph Macchio. Like, it was insane.
Yeah.
So they're the sweetest dudes. And like, I don't know. It's just like, it's a trip to be in that world. They're really into like, Chris is a really sweet guy. And he's really knowledgeable of like Massive Attack and Nick Cave and that kind of music and stuff. So, but yeah, super good dude. And it's also like, kind of never know when it's going to come up or if it'll ever come up again. But I would have never guessed that much creative work would have come out of that.
So is Chris aware of, or does he have an opinion on the music of Mike Park?
He has no clue. Mike's trying to get on the job though. He's like, you got to bring me along on the next one, dude.
Yeah. So next video, he's got to have a cameo. At least he's got to be an actor in it.
We need a Mike Park cameo in the next one.
Yeah. I guess that's actually one of Mike's things. He loves to try and get into stuff. Just put me in it. Let's just do it.
He has a whole like reel of like things that he's been like in the background of.
Yeah. Angels in the Outfield is one of the biggest ones. Martin Short Show.
The Martin Short Show one is so good.
It's great.
Where he's just like, I don't know what's going on. And then Martin Short runs away.
He's like, okay.
How was working with Ralph Macchio?
Ralph Macchio's the best. Like, you know, it was a trip because it's just like, one of the things I wasn't prepared for is in Melbourne, the show Cobra Kai is like the number one show on Netflix. So people were freaking out when they saw him on the streets. It was as if he was like Michael Jackson or something. Like, you know, if he were to walk down the street here in LA, like I'm sure people would turn their heads, but that show's so popular that he's just like fully sought after. And it would actually became not like majorly problematic, but we were super aware of it because we'd be, well, actually this is one of the funniest parts to this, but like we had to get off this one crazy shot at the end of that music video where we only got one shot to do it. And a Coldplay show has 55,000 people at it at like a minimum. And there are people who get to the front stage at like 2:30 in the afternoon. And we are planning to film this shot where we're going to place Macchio in the front of the stage. And then Chris will notice him and call him on stage. And we got, it was like 2:30 in the afternoon. People start loading in and there are, the producer walks over and he says, we have a small problem. And he walks me to the stage and people are there and he's like, check it out. And there was like three women wearing Karate Kid outfits with the headbands and like all the stuff and like all the t-shirts. And we're like, if we place him next to these people, they're going to lose their minds. We had to basically strong arm them and be like, please, like, don't look at the camera. Don't like, you know, we only have one shot to get this. And they played ball really well and they were cool, but it was just like, yeah, it was intense. The Coldplay fan lore is huge. They're kind of like the Grateful Dead of our era right now. Like the people who go to those shows are so in love with that band and everything they do. And it's cool. It's cool to see.
I just looked on Spotify right now. How many listeners do you think Coldplay has? Do you know?
It's got to be in the billions.
Monthly listeners.
Yeah, they're bigger now than ever before.
Yeah. Okay, this is the most I think I've seen in a while. 94.7 million listeners. How many does Chodo Ghetto have?
Wow.
That's for Mike Park right there.
Thank you for listening to In Defense of Ska. To support the show, sign up for our Patreon. Intro and outro music by Slow Gherkin from the EP Lives. Additional music by Dan P. and the Bricks. Please rate and review the podcast and tell a friend. Follow at In Defense of Ska on social media. The book In Defense of Ska by Aaron Carnes is available from Clash Books. Order it online. Chris Reeves of SPI is our editor. This is your co-host, Adam Davis of Omnigon, leaving you by saying ska now more than ever.
Okay, thank you so much for listening to our conversation with Chris Candy. If you don't want this to be over, though, if you didn't have enough time with Aaron and I, Aaron, what can they do?
Well, it's very simple what you can do. You go to patreon.com/indefensiveska and you say subscribe, subscribe, subscribe.
Mm. How much does that cost, Aaron?
Well, at the minimum, $5 a month, but you can go higher and you should go higher. Only $5 minimum, though. So you could just throw that $5
And then you can listen to us talk to Chris. I think we talk about Mike Park a little bit more, maybe. I'm not sure. Feels like what we talk about now in this podcast, Mike Park. We're trying to make up for last season. So now we're talking about Mike Park as much as possible.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.